What a fantastic communion service we just had. Nick just knocked it out of the park. That was really fantastic and really took our minds where they needed to be for a communion. That's the way that's supposed to look. And then the song they sang just was like, you know, I wasn't familiar with the first part of it, and I really liked that. But then when they kicked it into, oh, brother, you know, where art thou land, I was just like, okay, I'm in. Great job. Really beautiful. And let's begin in Romans chapter 12, beginning in verse 3. And here the Apostle Paul writes, by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you. Just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we who are many form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him prophesy in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it's encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. He says, think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the measure of faith that God has given you. God has given us all a measure of faith. Some of us he gave several pounds. Some of us he gave just a little bit. Some of us he gave maybe just a little mustard seed. He all gave us faith, though. And he says, use your gifts in accordance with your faith. In the body, you have different members. You have ears. You have noses. You have a liver. And all those different parts of your body have different functions. He says that's exactly how it is with your church body. He says we're all members, but we all have different functions. We all have different gifts. You know, what are your gifts today? I think a lot of times we wonder, where are my gifts? Everybody's talking about gifts all the time. Where are my gifts? What are my gifts? You know, a lot of times gifts don't have to be like super loud and always, you know, it's like, energetic, that's a gift. Cheerful, that's a gift. If you know people that are cheerful, they're just always cheerful. It's like you like being around them. It's a gift. Now, you're probably not going to be able to monetize that gift, but, you know, it's still a gift nonetheless. I'm a good listener. That's a gift. You know, and I think sometimes we got to get quiet and just listen to see what those gifts are. Because it may not be, I can sing like crazy, like these ladies just did. I can do that. You know, it's like that may not be your gift. In fact, that may not be your gift. But find out what your gift is. You know, the last time we spoke about gifts, I shared with you that I have discovered some gifts that I have. And the gift of brevity. Okay, that's one. I can get in there, I can say stuff, I can say it fast and get out. Many of you do not have the gift of brevity. And, you know, actually, what is it with old people and directions? Seems like the older we get, the more interested we are in how we got where we went. It's like, well, you know, I went to the bank, and I took a right on Main Street, and then I took a left on Maple. No, I took a right on Main Street, and then I took a left on Elm Street. Nobody cares. People barely care about where you went or what you did when you got there. They sure don't care if you took a right on Main Street. So again, quit with that. That's not a gift of brevity right there. But I found a new gift that I have, and that is the gift of knowing how to be sick. I know how to be sick. Now, some people we know, and he's watching right now. He just texted me. Some people we know do not know how to be sick. Jim Linehan does not know how to be sick. Here's Jim's idea of being sick. I've got my full schedule. I'm sick as a dog. I'm going to keep working. That's Jim. He does not know how to be sick. I do. When I don't feel well, I am shutting it down. I'm going to sleep for 24 hours because of inexperience. It's like the world's still going to turn. Yeah, it's still going to be there, and everything's going to be fine. I know how to get sick. And then also a new one I found was I have the gift of overconfidence. I have the gift of overconfidence. Whatever situation I go into, I feel like I know how to handle this. Whatever person I meet, I think they're going to like me. Whatever problem there is, I know. Lolly's like, really? You think that? That's no way. But, you know, it's like I have the gift of overconfidence. Now, there's no actual basis in fact for my confidence, but it's just I have the gift of overconfidence. And trust me, it beats the alternative. Because a lot of you guys have the gift of not being confident at all when you should be. I'm just confident even though I shouldn't be. And I'll take that. In fact, in 2003, you know, remember 2003 when we reorganized the church? Remember that? And so I was trying to figure out, I was getting out of the ministry, and I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do with my life? I actually considered becoming a male model. I did. Now, again, there's no basis in actual fact. But that's how confident. I thought, you know, there's like, they need 48-year-old guys to, like, sell their stuff. You know, the rugged salt and pepper Marlboro man. I'll just be a model. And I told it to Kim, and she responded about the way you're responding. She laughed. But that's the gift of overconfidence. I have that. So how do you figure out what your gifts are? Okay? There's three criteria. Number one, you have to think you're good at something, and you have to enjoy it. Okay? Secondly, your mom has to think you're good at it. Because if your mom ain't buying in, Joker, you're not got it. And then the third thing is, you have to get feedback from other people that you're good at it. Because you may think, you know, I am a great teacher. Ho-ho, I am so good at teaching. But if nobody comes to your classes, they're giving you feedback that you're not really that good. Like the ladies here, when they sang, what did they get at the end? They got feedback. That was really good. That's feedback. If you sing and nobody claps, that's also feedback. So you got to think you're good. Your mom's got to think you're good. Other people got to think you're good. When I was about 15, we got a basketball goal that for Christmas or birthday or something, it was installed in the side yard. So I really got into basketball. And I mean, I was out there all the time, and I was making everything. My shots were going in. My dribbling was amazing. You know, my moves were phenomenal. And, you know, so I'd say, you know, I'm really good at this. And then my mom would come out in her bathrobe drinking a cup of coffee. Honey, you're really good at this. So then I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take this thing public. I'm going to take it on the road. I'm going to take my talents to South Beach. And I'm going to get involved in some games, some pickup games. So I went down to the school and I got involved in some pickup games, and it quickly became obvious to me that I was the worst player on the team. Because my shots were blocked, my dribbles were stolen, and my moves were largely ignored. And that was feedback. Now, I thought I was good, my mom thought I was good, but other people didn't think I was good. They gave me feedback. So it turns out I wasn't good. But I want to talk about gifts. Acts chapter 4. Turn over there for me. Acts chapter 4. Verse 32. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of his possessions was his own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. This is what life was like in the early first century church. Much grace was with them all. There were no needy persons among them, for from time to time, those who owned lands or homes sold them, brought the money from the sales and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone as he had need. Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, sold a field he owned and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet. Okay, so you've got Joseph from Cyrus here, and he was one of the people that would take a piece of land that he had, sell it, bring the proceeds, put it at the apostles' feet, and said, do with this what you want to do with it. Help the poor, whatever. Just you guys got this, handle it. And so the apostles started calling him Barnabas. His name was Joseph. He was Joe. But they gave him a nickname. They called him Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. Now, you can get nicknames for a lot of things, and usually it's, you know, just kind of what you are. Like you can get Lefty or Shorty or Lumpy. Yeah, you can get that as a nickname. My favorite one is for Anthony Davis, the center for the New Orleans Pelicans. He's the Brow. He's the Brow. That's his nickname. Now, this guy's a multimillionaire. Buy some tweezers. Seriously. Buy some tweezers. But that's his nickname, the Brow. Please take that off. That's very disturbing to look at. But Barnabas got a nickname, and it was like, he's the son of encouragement. He's really excellent at encouraging us. He's great at giving. And, you know, it occurred to me that in 2 weeks from today, we're having our missions contribution. 2 weeks from today. And I don't think we've mentioned it. It's almost like we're trying to keep it a secret. And, you know, it's like every week we give in the contribution, and that money that we give is to keep the light bill paid and to pay the ministers, the paid ministry staff, and thank you for doing that. That's wonderful. You don't know, it means so much for Jim, Danny, Katie, Corey, myself, to be able to work in the full-time ministry. Thank you very much. That's what our weekly contribution for. Our missions contribution is for extra stuff. It's for stuff that we do in Africa. It's for stuff that we do down in La Paz, Bolivia. It's for stuff that we do down in the campus ministries of the Atlanta University Center at Spelman and Morehouse through the path. It's for the Drake House. That's what the missions contribution is all about. And we haven't even mentioned it. It's like in 2 weeks, it's going to be like, hey, we're having our missions contribution. Oh, yeah, that's right. And it's almost like we're trying to keep it a secret. Now, I've been through missions contributions before that were a bit more arm twisty than that. Anybody relate to that? You know, it's like, it used to be like you had people monitoring like how much you're planning on giving. They come to you, bro, what do you plan on giving for the missions contribution? You're coming in a little light here, a little light. And, you know, there's people above me that are not going to be happy to hear. And so, what can I do to encourage you? What can I do to inspire you? It was a lot more kind of, you need to do this, dude. You need it. And here, it's like, we're not even telling you. It's just like a pop quiz. But we're having it nonetheless. You know, we're going to ask you to take from your money and give it to the church. Lay it at the apostles' feet and let us distribute it. Money. Money. How many of you guys stood in line last week to buy a lottery ticket? Raise them up. Honesty is the best policy. A bunch of liars in here. Anybody know what this is? This is the non-winning lottery ticket, also known as a piece of trash. That's what that is. And yet we stood in line to buy tickets. And, you know, I usually don't buy lottery tickets, but for this one, it was $1.6 billion that you would get. If the right numbers were on that little scrap of paper there, it's like I would have 1.6, not by any merit, not by any hard work, just by blind, dumb luck, $1.6 billion. And I don't even know why city people even ever try to play the lottery, because nobody from the city ever wins it. It's never like, the winner today is from New York City or San Francisco or even like a Macon. No, it's always out in the country somewhere. They, you know, it was Buzzard Lip, South Carolina is the winner. And it was sold at some convenience store in the middle of nowhere. Clay Reed's Bag and Drag was where the thing was sold. And it's always like that. So I don't know why city people even try it, but apparently we do. But when I was standing in line this time for $1.6 billion, there was a different feel in the line. It was a little bit more hardcore. Kind of a little bit more, you know, desperate. Like, you know, a guy sidles up, hey, buddy, you got a couple bucks I can spar? You know, I need a few bucks. You got, you know, it's just like, it's kind of desperate. It's kind of seedy almost. You know, your 18-year-old derelict son that lives in your basement and plays video games and only eats at Taco Bell, he could have won it. No merit. Nothing he did. Imagine how that would change the family dynamic. So, honey, have you given any thought to what you're going to spend the $1.6 billion on? Yeah, you know, actually, I was going to buy the Johnson's house next door. And then I was going to have them, like, put a Taco Bell there so that I could just walk over and, you know. It's like, anybody could win $1.6 billion. I found a scripture about money, since that's what we're talking about, that I have never seen. And I've been around the block a time or two in the Bible. I've never seen this. If you need validation and verification, go to Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 19. This is going to blow your mind. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 19 says, "The feast is made for laughter. Wine makes life merry. And money is the answer for everything." What? Money's the answer for everything? I did not know that. Money is the answer for everything. What's the question? I don't know, but money's the answer. See, but money can't buy us love. Money can't buy you peace. Money can't take away the grief you feel when something hurts. But money is the answer for everything. So I think we need to drill down on money a little bit because we're having our missions contribution in 2 weeks too. Money is a construct. Money is something that we made up. We constructed money. It used to be, remember in school you had the bartering system. You know, here, I'll give you two chickens and you give me a baby pig. And yet it was hard to work that out. And so, you know, we finally came up with a construct of money so that we were able to say that this is a medium of exchange for goods and services. And this enables us to be able to value something that is like two objects that are widely disparate. Like a Ferrari is basically the same value as a trailer home on a lot down in Albany, Georgia. Those two things are about the same. I did not know that. But see, money helps figure that out. Money tells us, the market tells us what the value of something is. You go to work, you do your labor, they give you paper or metal or a digital number in your bank account, and then you take that paper, metal, or digital number and you spend it on goods and services. That's all money is. It's just a construct. Why do we spend our money? Well, there's three reasons. One, because we have to. You have to spend money sometimes. You have to pay bills. You know, every month you sit down and you have to pay the bills. And the goal of the game is to have more money left over after you've paid the bills. Some of us are losing at that game, but that's the game. Pay your bills. Now, paying bills gives me no pleasure. There are no pleasure centers that dopamine hits when I'm paying bills. It's just, I got to get this done. I have to do this. In fact, Kim knows that I'm not really in a good mood when I pay bills. Her thing is, okay, he's paying the bills. Don't poke the bear. Just keep you walk in, turn around, and walk out when she sees me doing that. But that's why we spend money. We have to. Other times, we want to spend money. Have you ever heard of retail therapy? Retail therapy. It's like, I'm depressed, therefore I want to go shopping. I want a new purse. I want a new basketball. I want a new pair of shoes. I want a new Ferrari. I'm depressed, therefore I want to go shopping. I don't understand this. Here's what I understand. I'm depressed. I want to watch sports. That I get. I'm depressed. I want to eat a half gallon of chocolate ice cream. That I get. But I don't get the retail therapy. But people buy things to make themselves feel better. The dopamine centers do get hit with that. Now, I'm not like that. I don't really get a charge. You can ask my mom. I've never been that interested in buying stuff for me. I want to pay the bills. I don't, and it's not because I'm a saint. I just don't care about it. And, you know, Kim is the opposite of that. Kim cares a lot about it. She's not here, so I can tell you in great detail. Did you know that Kim is a preferred shopper? I did not know that there was such a thing. But we'd be walking down the street and people would come out of their shops. Kim, are you coming in today? And I found out she's a preferred shopper. They know her. She's on their hit list. I am not a preferred shopper. So we have to spend money. We want to spend money. But then there's a third time. And this is what's important for our discussion. We spend money when we're inspired to spend money. When we are inspired. When you hear something and you say, this is a worthy cause. Last week on College Game Day, they had this kid, went to Purdue, Tyler Trent. He has osteosarcoma, bone cancer. He's on his last legs, been through so much chemo. And it was his last intention and will and testament to go to the Purdue or Ohio State game. And he went, and of course, you know, what's the guy, Tom Rinaldi? He always does these things. You know, so 10:30 on Saturday morning, I'm like, you know, I'm just weeping. Kim walks in, what is happening? It's like, it moved me. And if they had had a GoFundMe or a, you know, send your check here, I would have been all about it because it was a worthy cause. It's the way that works. I was at a Sprouts, you know, the Sprouts, the grocery store. And I was walking in, it was the end of the summer, I was walking in, and as I was walking in, a woman had pulled in with her van, and she had parked a little bit too close to the curb, so when she got out, she kind of caught her foot between the car and the van, and she fell. She fell right down on the ground. And she was an older lady, and she was not petite. She was not. And so I saw her fall, and it was a pretty hard fall. And so I ran over there because I wanted to help her up. And it's not like I'm trying to, oh, I'm so amazing. No, any one of us in this room would have done exactly the same thing. Because I saw the need, and it was like the way she was in her car, it was kind of secluded from other people. Nobody else could see her. But I saw her, so she ran over. I ran over there, and she was lying there, and she was, you know, scared and embarrassed, you know, that whole thing. And I said, are you okay? And so I said, let me help you get up. And so then I started assessing the situation that this was not a front-end job. It was not like, she was down there and I was going to, let me help you up, mademoiselle. You know, she was like, you know, Griselda or something, you know, just very dainty and petite. That was not her. I realized this is going to have to be a go-around behind her and forklift underneath her armpits and lift her up. Now, did I mention that it was summertime? You follow where I'm going with this. And did I mention also that she was wearing a sleeveless dress? So I go around behind and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm just really going to have to just get on in there. This is no place for half measures. So I got behind her and I forklifted right underneath her armpits. And I lifted her up. Set her straight. You know, she was still a little shaky. She decided just go ahead and get back in her car and go on home. She'll do this another time. And so she thanked me and she pulled off and is like, you know, amen. Any one of us would have done that. But here's the point. Take it home, Daddy. Take it home. Here's the point. Number one, I saw a need. Okay? Number two, I was uniquely positioned to meet that need. Nobody else saw her. I was the one. You would have done the same thing. Now, if you had got there and assessed and said, I'm not strong enough to do this, you would have gone and got somebody. So I saw the need. I was uniquely positioned. And then I paid the price. And this time the price was sticking my arms into her armpits and really just getting right on in there. Now, if that's too graphic, that's what service in America looks like, okay? So I was inspired to give. There are so many ways for us to give, but, you know, it's not just paying the bills. It's not just, you know, buying some retail therapy. It's being inspired. It's seeing a worthy cause. And because of that, you want to give. You want to take money out of your account and give it to the worthy cause so that they can use it, even though you're really not going to see a huge return. You've got to be seeing the need. You've got to be uniquely positioned, and then you've got to pay the price. And there's so many ways that we can do that. There's a young man today here. He's 21 years old. His name is Xander Stonestreet. Many years ago, probably about 15 years ago, Nick and Rhonda Stonestreet were at a worship service. It wasn't here. I think it was over in the east part of town. Maybe Cornerstone, maybe not. I don't know. Cornerstone. And they were just visiting over there, just there for that day. And they heard somebody get up and say, you know, listen, guys, there's a need. There's one of these kids in the orphanages in India, and he's about to be too old, and they're about to turn him out on the street because he's too old. And Nick and Rhonda were visiting church that day, and they, you know, and they said, if you know of anybody. And Nick and Rhonda said, well, we see the need. We're uniquely positioned to take care of this kid. And so they said, hey, we'll do it. And so they adopted Xander from India, and he's with us here today. I know. I mean, that's amazing. And they didn't do it. They didn't do it to get the hand clap at church 15 years later. They did it because they saw a need. They did it because they were uniquely positioned to do something about it. And they did it because they love God and they were willing to pay the price. And the price that was paid was money. You know, there was money involved. But it also was heartache. I remember one time, you know, getting the call from Rhonda. Steve, oh my gosh, I was their real estate agent, you know, and all. You got to help us. Xander's gone. He's run away. And it was like, oh, you know, great. You remember that? We found him actually at the Fifth Plaza food court, which is, you know, pretty, you know, that's where I would go if I was from India. But it's like, you know, their heart was involved in it. They saw a worthy cause and they said, this is worthy. I'm inspired to give my money to this. And Xander's here today and he's just like the happiest, most cheerful guy you're ever going to meet in this lifetime. He knows what God did for him. He knows what Nick and Rhonda did for him. And God knows what Nick and Rhonda did. And now we know what Nick and Rhonda did. God bless them. Amen. God bless them. There's so many ways. Missions contribution coming up. You know, it's like Africa. I've been to Africa, and Africa is an amazing place. And the joy of the people that have so little, but they're just so in love with life and so in love with God. I've seen the zeal of the churches over there. I have street preached in Kibera in Kenya and had a witch doctor come out to meet me because he was concerned that I was preaching to his congregation. I was out by the railroad tracks and we were preaching, and this witch doctor comes out, you know, with this whole thing. I mean, you know, it was like, I've been to Africa. It's nuts. It's crazy over there. But I mean, it's so much like the first century. Do you know that in 2003 that the American churches used to give $3 million a year to the work in Africa? Do you know that this past year we gave $600,000? We're down 80% over what we used to give to Africa just because we got all reorganized and weird. That's really the deal. You know, it's like, can't we find it in our hearts to give to these people? Kim and I were in Panama a couple weeks ago at an international leadership conference. The work in Africa is still thriving. It's still growing. And they are making do with what they have. But they get 80% less than they did 15 years ago. I think it's about time for that pendulum to start going back the other way and start bumping it up. If that's a cause that you can get inspired by, if that's a cause that you can say, this is worthy of me giving to, I want to give to this, I want to give $1,000 to that because it's important. Even if you don't see anything that comes out of that. Now, you know, again, money, we can figure out a Ferrari's worth, a trailer lot in the lot in Albany, Georgia. Well, it's like, how about $1,000 from your account? How many people... How many Africans will that translate into becoming Christians? I will tell you this, when you convert one African, you convert the whole family. You know, so what if we were able to say, if I give $1,000 to Africa and you can earmark it on your check, I want all this money to go to Africa. I don't want none of it to go to the Drake House. I don't want none of it to go to the Path. I want it all to go to Africa, or I want it all to go to here. It's like if you knew that $1,000 out of your account was going to mean 25 people in Africa became a Christian. Would that be worthy? Would that be something that you could get behind? Well, see, that's what you got to figure out. What is it worth to me? Because listen, we see a need. I mean, we're a little dinky-doo, little drop in the bucket in the churches and in the world, but there's so much work to be done. And just because we got our tail feathers rustled up and, you know, it's like it's still out there. The world's still waiting for us. How much more now? You know, I mean, the world's crazy. Absolutely crazy. It's the way it works. You see the need. You give the money. And you see it all work out. You know, Barnabas was an amazing man. He was the son of encouragement. And in your life, you get opportunities to do things. 2 weeks from now, you know, it's like we're going to be giving money. It's going to go to Africa, whatever we give. And apparently we're trying to keep it a secret, but the cat's out of the bag. It's going to go to Africa. It's going to go to Spelman University. It's going to go to Morehouse. I mean, they're down there on campus. They're converting kids at Spelman. They're converting kids at Morehouse. They are doing a great job. And we've been friends with them and had a connection with the Path for a long, long time. Mike Patterson, Angel Maldonado, Christine Maldonado just spoke at the Women's Day. It's like we have a connection with them. To me, that's a worthy cause. That is a worthy cause. Drake House, amazing. You know, this Wednesday night we had the old geezer meeting. The food was awesome. And, you know, it's just, and we talked about what can we do? What can we get inspired about? And that's still what we're talking about. You know, there's a lot of ways you can give. You can adopt a kid from India like the Stone Streets did. You can give to missions, or you can help somebody just become a Christian. You know, just right here in good old Roswell, Georgia, help somebody become a Christian. You know, if you've ever done that before, if you've ever had the experience of meeting someone that got baptized or studying the Bible with someone that got baptized, no one can ever take that joy away from you. I don't care what happened to them, what happened to you, nobody can take away that joy. And that joy doesn't have to be over. There's still people that need to be baptized. There's still people that need to find God. That's what Barnabas was great at. That's why he was the son of encouragement. He was brokering all these relationships. Later on, he brought Paul down from Tarsus and put him into the church in Antioch. And this was Paul, the Jew-killing, you know, Christian. And it's like he comes into these churches, and it's like I bet there were people in those churches whose parents he had murdered. But Barnabas was able to broker those relationships and to bring those people together. And when you help somebody become a Christian, that's what you're doing. You're bringing them together with the church. You're bringing them together with God. So I hope you'll think about this. It's not all about money. It's mostly about our hearts. It's about paying bills. It's about, you know, buying retail therapy, all the stuff we want to do. But most importantly for us, it's about being inspired to give. So think about that these next few days. Let's pray as we close out.